Welcome to Adoption Talk by Spence Chapin, the podcast where all the voices of the adoption constellation come together. Twice a month, this podcast brings you conversations with adoptees, birth parents, adoptive families, and adoption professionals as they share their experiences and discuss all things adoption. We're glad you've joined us. On today's episode, we look back to a trip to South Africa in 2019 that launched the Granny Program expansion. CEO Kate Trambitskaya, CPO Linda Alexander, and Senior Director of Legal and Compliance Chelsea Guffey traveled to meet with our partners at four orphanages in Johannesburg. They chronicled the challenges that the children were facing, which they observed firsthand, and the benefits they knew the Granny Program expansion would bring to them. Back in 2019, 30 children were being served by the Granny Program. Today, more than 160 children are served. As the Spence Chapin team once again prepares to travel to South Africa to expand the program, we bring you this great discussion on the impact of the Granny Program in the lives of children. Let's get started.
Today, we're speaking with Kate Trambitskaya, CEO of Spence Chapin, Linda Alexandri, Chief Program Officer, and Chelsea Guffey, Director of Legal and Compliance at Spence Chapin. And we're talking about their trip to South Africa and the impact the Granny Program has on the children at JCW. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
It's so nice to have you and finally be together to talk about this amazing South Africa trip. So before we get started, that was sort of a very brief introduction. Would each of you just tell me a little bit about yourself, your title, what you do, maybe just a little bit about the how you came to Spence Chapin?
My background, personal background is my aunt used to run an orphanage in Russia, and she was a director there. And I was born in Belarus, and I used to visit the orphanage quite often, and really took in how what life was like for kids living in an institutional setting. And it stayed with me. And I knew that I wanted to work in child welfare and in adoption. And here I am. Years later, traveling with my colleagues and my team to South Africa.
Thanks, Kate. So Linda, tell me your title and what you do at Spence Chapin and how you came to Spence.
Sure. So I am the Chief Program Officer. So I oversee all our placing programs, including domestic and international. So I started here at Spence Chapin right out of school, actually, graduate school, in 1996. I had no real connection to adoption, but quickly fell in love and have been here and working with this wonderful team for 23 years now. And it's been an honor, and I cannot wait to continue and see where we go. But adoption to me is one of the most extraordinary experiences for everybody involved.
Thank you. Thanks. And Chelsea?
I am the Director of Legal and Compliance at Spence Chapin, and I came to Spence Chapin as a law student. I knew that I wanted to work for Spence Chapin because I had done my homework on the agency and its legacy in New York City for helping children. I have had some adoption themes in my life. I definitely feel a calling to this work, but in the capacity as an attorney for the agency and the director of compliance, I feel like my niche in the field is really about the children's rights framework and how essential it is for children to have families and to grow up in family settings. I had some experiences in college where I had the opportunity to travel to many institutions, and I've had that privilege with Spence-Chapin as well. And I think that for me, just how crucial a family is to a person accessing the rest of their rights for the rest of their life just really matters to me. And so I love the work that Spence-Chapin does both domestically and internationally to ensure that children grow up in families. And that's why I feel lucky to be at Spence.
Thank you. Thank you. So all three of you have long histories with adoption and to some extent with international adoption. So you are the perfect people to go on this trip. So I just want to circle back a little bit to the program in general. At the opening, I mentioned JCW, but we didn't explain what it is. That's the Joburg Child Welfare. And it was in 2019 that the three of you took a trip to South Africa to visit with our partners at Joburg Child Welfare to expand our granny program and observe the living conditions of children in orphanages there. So could you talk a little bit about the granny program to begin with? What is that? How does it work?
So I guess I'm happy to begin, and Chelsea and Linda, please do jump in. So the granny program is really an incredible program that pairs children living in institutions worldwide with caregivers who come in regularly and continuously to really attach, to work with children on attachment bonding issues, to really have a one permanent caregiver that they know and really look forward to working with. And, you know, for the women that come to visit with the children, these women come from the community. They are the women who are invested in making sure that the children of their community are getting the best that they can and are, you know, attaching to adults to create better outcomes and opportunities for them, because the reality is that many children will wind up aging out and really will be missing those connections. The granny program for Spence-Chapin began in 1998 and has really crossed many, many countries and has been successful in many ways, helping thousands of children over the years. And while there has been a shift in international adoption for many countries and many programs, the one thing that remains steady is the number of institutionalized children and their need to be connected to individuals. And specifically, we believe at Spence-Chapin here that these individuals are the ones who can be trained, who can become grannies, who can become that permanent secure figure for the child. While they're deciding their permanency, essentially, or where they're going to wind up in, whether it's domestic adoption, international adoption, return to their birth family, which is one of the rarest options, or, you know, unfortunately, aging out to their community and to, in many instances, homelessness. And so the importance of granny is really, it cuts across children whose lives are really, whose lives and outcomes are uncertain from that respect.
That sounds amazing. And it's pretty impressive that Spence-Chapin began the granny program so long ago. So it's a model program for us. So you're talking about orphanages and South Africa, and I mean, when I hear that, I relate through the foster care system in New York, but clearly there are differences. Could one of you talk a little bit about what life is like for a child in an orphanage in South Africa?
Yeah, I think that that's important context for, you know, anyone that's never been in an institution before to understand how special the granny program is, how unique it is to do something so simple as to bring one person into the life of a child day in and day out, and how we can see with a simple program like that incredible outcomes. In order to understand that, you have to understand what life in an institution is like. I mean, the children in institutions, even in, you know, some of the best institutions in the world, lack consistent caregiving. So the ratios of caregivers, children are, you know, oftentimes 1 to 10. Caregivers have shifts. They're not parents that live with the children, so they're there for a few hours. You see things like that as far as all different types of confusion with attachment, which I'm sure that Linda can speak to much better than me, but you'll see indiscriminate attachment where children, you'll walk into an institution and children will run to you in hordes, and you'll be, you know, you just have to sit down because they'll pile on top of you because they crave attention. And then you can spend all afternoon with them and they walk away like you're a stranger, because you are, you know, everyone is mama that walks into an institution, because there is no consistent and steady relationship of a mother to child or a parent to child caregiver relationship that these children have ever experienced. Oftentimes when they're young and they live most of their life in institutions, there's also uniformity and efficiency that, you know, just is not tailored to the needs of a specific child. So that you'll see things like bathroom schedules are all on the same schedule. Feeding schedules are all on the same schedule. Oftentimes there's nutritional issues. Even just the act of feeding a infant is an act of bonding between a parent and child. It's FaceTime, it's one-on-one, it's intimate. Children in institutions don't get that. If they're fed at all, it looks oftentimes like assembly line feeding or bottle propping. Children are not held, they're not touched in the same level of frequency that they are in a home. So all of these things add up to essentially neglect that is detrimental to a child's brain development, emotional development, physical development. Children that live in institutions have physical differences from their peers that are living in the community, that are living in homes. And so the institutional setting is isolated from the community, and it's always, even at its best, an inadequate solution for children.
Thank you, Jill. That really paints such a vivid picture of what life is like and what the impact of that kind of existence is on children. Thank you. So I'm curious about another thing that I've been reading about with regard to this program, and that's Project Play. Linda, do you want to talk a little bit about Project Play and why it came about and why it's important?
You know, in talking about attachment and consistency for children and having a nurturing presence, the other aspect of children, what they need is to play. Children need to be able to run around, be physical. You know, it's been aligned with brain development, all those things. So I think, you know, Project Play came about with those things in mind. It's a combination of the granny, having a granny and consistency present, but also being able to play and having access to play and therapeutic play. As Chelsea mentioned, you know, there's a lot of developmental issues with these children because they're in an institution. So the idea was born that, of course, in combination with a granny, we should be able to provide an ability for children to play in a way where it's therapeutic and they can develop. And it's all the things. It impacts brain, it impacts their physicality. So That's how, you know, the idea of combining these two things came about, so that there is greater impact on these children that are living in an institution.
So what does the play actually look like? Do you come in and create, bring toys, or what kind of play constitutes project play?
Well, we're doing a couple things with project play. One thing that we're doing in South Africa, which is really exciting, is that we are creating play space for the children, particularly outdoor play space. Many institutions lack adequate resources and lack the ability and funds to keep up their facilities. So we saw places that had absolutely no play space, or places that had, you know, play space that was unsafe at this point. It was old, it was run down, it was rusty. So one thing that we're excited about is that we're actually creating play spaces. And we're hoping that together with the granny program really encourages the children to be outside and to use more of their gross motor skills, to be able to climb on jungle gyms, to be creative, to manipulate their environment, and to just, you know, be active, which is something that's important for children, especially children in institutions, because that encouragement of physical activity is not always there in the institutional setting. The other part of Project Play, and I'm sure that Kate and Linda could talk to this also, that we're very excited about, is birthday celebrations for the children. Again, that's in the same vein of individualizing the children that are in an institutional setting. So we are helping to provide funding so that the children's individual birthdays can be celebrated, that they can get a small gift. And so that's part of Project Play also. And then through the granny program, there is, you know, interactive developmental play with the children, things like, you know, puzzles, coloring, you know, things that are normal, but there's with the grannies in the institutions, there's the ability for them to be able to sit down one-on-one with the child and say, what do you want to play today? And to let the child, you know, use their imagination, to encourage that, to run with it, to be creative, to be proud of themselves when they, you know, can color inside the lines or whatever it looks like. It's that one-on-one encouragement of play that then the granny program brings to this idea of what we're doing with Project Play also.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. These things sound so simple. And as you said, we take them for granted, those of us who are in families that provide these things for us, but it's so important. So how does a child in South Africa find him or herself in an orphanage?
Most of the children in South Africa are abandoned, and they're abandoned in places that are pretty horrific, in sewers, on the fields, in front of hospitals or other settings. There are currently about 3 million orphans in South Africa, and most of them have been abandoned, and many of them under the age of one. You know, just working with a child who really has no name, a John Doe or a Jane Doe, and then proceeding through the court system of terminating parental rights, where those rights do not exist, and really proceeding with abandonment. And that's a pretty lengthy process that happens in South Africa like anywhere else, because of all the legal documents that you need to get your hands on for the child in order to proceed in the way that would make sense to give that child an identity.
Thank you, Kate. So I have some more questions for you, Kate. So how did you begin to partner with Joburg? And are you partnering with other institutions in South Africa?
Yes, of course. We partner with Joburg. We've been partners with JCW. They're an incredible partner of ours. We partnered with them in 2011 when we began our program for our placement program And around, we actually started with our granny program in South Africa and then did our placement program. So we've been in partnership with them for more than a decade. And they are what we call our foreign supervised provider, you know, in accordance to all the Hague treaties and laws, we need to have a viable partner in country that's been accredited, approved, for lack of better wording. And JCW is, you know, that and that much more. They're a trusted partner, one who shares in our mission and vision in helping children and ensuring that their futures are, they're set up for success and for the best possible outcomes. They're huge proponents of the granny program. They have developed the training, the preparation, and have worked so closely in expanding the granny program. And over this past year, because of JCW and working closely with JCW, we went from serving 30 children in two institutions to serving 108 children in less than 7 months. Yeah. And that really is the work of JCW, and making sure that the children that they are serving and caring for have the opportunity to have this one person attached to them, care for them, love them, and provide for the very basic needs. And they are huge proponents of this because they know that it works. Mm-hmm. It works so much because there's this such a huge difference in the children who are living in institutions and have the benefit of the granny and those who do not. And we witnessed it firsthand. It's, you're juxtaposing two places. So you go to one and you see the children who are able to attach easily to adults, who recognize their granny and look forward to her coming in every single day and missing her on the weekends, to those institutions where children are not even able to recognize the importance of an adult being present in the room or unable to express an emotion. And really, you know, as Chelsea described, have this, you know, institutionalized behavior that is embedded in their everyday, you know, lives. And, you know, JCW recognizes that and has been really fighting hard to bring the granny program into other institutions and places because they know the benefits of the granny. Mm-hmm. And we are going to be more mindful of how we track the granny program in terms of the metrics. So Chelsea has referenced how many children in institutions have attachment issues. So many of them have developmental delays, about 80% of the children. So for us, it's very important to see the impact of the granny program in numbers. How many of these children who are seeing or having the benefits of the granny, how are they developing through the years? And there are concrete metrics in place that help capture that development and help put those numbers into perspective so others see the importance of that granny. Also not forget the efficacy that brings to all the grannies, the importance. We're talking about a country that has an incredible history of, you know, so much history that has shattered the country in so many different ways, changed it economically, and in many other ways, politically, race-wise. It's a country that has, you know, a huge disparity between the economic classes and the women who are serving the children, who are helping the children, find this sense of belonging. They feel this enormous pride. These are their children from their community. They're also getting a stipend, and it helps them, you know, survive and bring something back to their family. So it's a win-win for both, because, you know, it's very difficult, as we know, in international adoption to try to bring an outsider in to facilitate any kind of change. But when you're really bringing someone from the community, what I call the insider, I think that change is much easily acceptable and can happen much quicker. So to answer your question, JCW is our sound partner. It's our only partner. We value, trust them, care for them. We know that they will just continue to grow and expand the Granny program for the benefit of the children in South Africa.
That sounds wonderful. I mean, thank you so much. I mean, it sounds like you guys put a lot of thought into how to structure this, and obviously a lot of thought into who your partner would be. And it's such a big topic that already I'm feeling like I'm looking forward to having more parts to this conversation, because I got a million questions every time each of you speak. I'm curious about JCW and the differences in the various orphanages throughout the country that you guys came into contact. What are some of the differences, and what are some of the common medical needs among the children in those orphanages?
So, I mean, I think there are many children's homes / orphanages in South Africa. When we visited, we were able to see several. Couple were connected to JCW, a couple were not. I think the stark difference, you know, for me was in the Granny program. I keep going back to that because as Kate was talking about it, it brought a lot of it back for me. And, you know, there was a real emotional reaction for me because I remember visiting one orphanage without a granny and seeing what was happening, the lack of bodies to help and that are there for the children. And it's the difference in walking into a children's home where there were grannies and the kids were smiling and playing and running around and interacting. It was so stark. And even in the volume, and that was the other thing that was very striking, is walking into an orphanage where there's such silence, where they really shouldn't be, because kids are noisy by nature and they should be noisy. And you walk into another orphanage where there is a granny program and the kids are interacting and they're speaking and they're squealing, all the things that they really should be doing at that age. And so, you know, it's stuck with me. And it's something that I revisit in my mind a lot, and why, you know, the thought of expanding this program just feels like it's a must. It's such a simple thing, you know, having a consistent nurturing presence that comes, somebody's eyes that light up when they see you versus not having that. And, you know, and what impact that has for a lifetime. So, you know, the differences in seeing the ones that we did see was around the granny program and the ability to have caregivers that are there consistently for the children. So, That's what really this all brings back for me.
So for each of you, was this your first trip to South Africa? And what were your impressions beyond what, you know, the main topic of this conversation? Did you have a chance to get around at all? Chelsea, your first trip to South Africa?
It was my first trip. It was a long flight. But we spent most of our time in Johannesburg, which is, you know, I think probably different than, I've had friends that have traveled to South Africa. I think a lot of people spend time up north and doing safaris or at the Cape. Joburg is a city. It reminds me a little bit of New York in ways. It's very urban. I think that you can feel in ways what Kate alluded to a little bit earlier of the history of the country, especially in an urban setting. I personally just feel that like cities are microcosms of, you know, the environment or the culture, because you just see so much in such a small space. I didn't know that, Joe, South Africa has 11 official languages, and that after apartheid, that one of the things that the country did to promote equality was to make every tribal language and every language that was spoken an official language of the country. So we had a driver who talked to us a little bit about what
what that looks like culturally to, you know, greet people and interact with people that oftentimes speak different languages than you, what a big role language plays in their country and their culture, how most people in South Africa speak multiple languages because of, you know, these divides that are there but are just very much laid out. We saw a lot of economic disparities. There are, what it felt like to me in observing the city was that there was very, very rich and very, very poor, and that you would see that from one neighborhood to another, you know, meshed together because it's a city environment. But it was, I think, something that I observed to be, you know, pretty stark in the contrast between the two. So there are experiences like that, but it's also just a beautiful country. And there's a lot of pride. And some of our partners, they shared with us these headdresses and purses that some of the women in their own community made, and they were traditional prints and traditional styles, and they're just gorgeous. We had a dinner one night and one of our partners wore like traditional dress, and she said that she did it on purpose because she wanted to share that part of her culture with us. And when we were leaving, one of our partners said, I hope that you enjoyed yourself and that you feel that Africans are warm. We're warm people, and I hope you felt that. And I said, we absolutely did. I mean, our partners are wonderful and amazing, but the culture there, you can tell that there's a history of conflict, just like our own country, a confusing, you know, painful history. And then there's also so much pride and beauty and coming together. And I'm grateful for the experience of being in Johannesburg the entire time and doing the work. And the work is, you know, with vulnerable populations. So you are seeing that right away. You are going to those neighborhoods. You are going to those communities. But you also see how the communities within those communities live, how they support each other, how they respond to each other, how organizations like JCW, you know, are there to support them and help them also. And so I think it was a really beautiful experience.
And I would say that, you know, for me, this was definitely my first time traveling to South Africa. And, you know, I echo the sentiment of how beautiful South Africa was, how proud, you know, the people of South Africa, our partners, the pride in their culture, and how complicated their history is, and deeply, deeply complicated. Just to share my most memorable experience is just how this pride really evolved itself with us as their partners. When we had lunch with them and shared, you know, our kind of less formal moments with them, they made sure that we were exposed to their traditional, you know, not only beautiful garments, but also food. So, you know, over lunch, we had their famous pop and chakalaka, which is, you know, a real way to introduce us to the culture and the people. And really, pop and chakalaka is something that everyone eats in South Africa. And no matter your economic background. So it was really wonderful to be immersed in the culture in that way. And by the way, pop is like porridge, and chakalaka is like a mixture of almost like a stew, and you can make it with anything. And one of the institutions that our partners run, they made it fresh, and they made it homemade. And it was such a beautiful and kind and warm gesture, a reflection of our partnership and their love for their culture and their people and their pride. So we're very happy to experience that. And for many reasons, South Africa is very near and dear. I think for I can speak freely for Chelsea and Linda to say it's very near and dear for us. because of our experience, because of the culture and the people, because of our partners, and mostly because of the children who really need the help.
This sounds amazing. I want to just mention that all of this work that you're talking about and we'll continue to talk about, we need support to keep it going. So any opportunity that people have to help us is more than welcome. So Kate Trombetskaya, CEO, Linda Alexandri, Chief Program Officer, Chelsea Guffey, Director of Legal and Compliance. Thank you so very much for this talk. Thank you for sharing all of your experiences around this program. And I hope to see you again to talk about this again. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Adoption Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating wherever you get your podcasts. You can also head to spence-chapin.org/adoptiontalk to leave feedback, suggest episode topics, and sign up for updates on the latest episodes. See you next time.